China needs Canada to be part of Huawei's international network.
Controversy continues over the arrest in Canada of a Chinese telecom executive. It's Monday, December 10th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a rare animal returns home. Pakistanis feel better with natural remedies. Green shipping on blue waters. Looking inside you, running with trash. It's all on today's VOA Asia. With many questions still unanswered, governments in both the United States and China appear to be working to limit the fallout from the arrest of a top Chinese technology executive and its possible impact on trade negotiations. News of the detention of tech giant Huawei's chief financial officer, Meng Wanzhou, in Canada has already rocked markets across the globe. Many were quick to voice concern that the move could completely derail ongoing trade talks. This, just as both sides were hailing last weekend's meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and China's Xi Jinping as a big success. China warned Canada Saturday that there would be severe consequences if it did not immediately release Huawei Technology Company Limited's chief financial officer, calling the case extremely nasty. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Paul Evans, a professor in the School of Public Policy and Global Affairs at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, and asked him how Canada is reacting to the situation.
We're caught in between a crossfire from the United States and China, and it is one that is intensifying. The bullets are flying faster and harder than ever. The challenge for Canada is that we do not want to violate the extradition treaty we have with the United States, the legal basis of this case, and nor do we want to offend the United States in bigger ways as it tightens the screws on China. At the same time, I think in Canada, there's a real desire to keep doors open to China. So China's reaction to us getting caught in the middle, to having the arrest take place on Canadian soil, is one where we're worried about the repercussions directly in our bilateral relations with China, but also it's how it's going to affect the U.S.-China balance. So this is indeed between a rock and a hard place.
The U.S. government has been pretty silent about this. How do you view that?
I think part of it is either a confusion or two parts of the Washington system operating in different ways at the same time. And I don't think this is a conspiracy that was cooked up by President Trump. I don't think whether he knew about it, he certainly didn't promote it because it would, in the period they're trying to have a truce with the Chinese on the big economic issues, to then pull this kind of thing, which has economic consequences, is somewhat guilt-free because at least on the surface of it, it looks like a Canadian action.
What about China's reaction?
You know, it's been verbally pretty strong, and I had an opportunity to meet with Canadian officials in Ottawa on Friday. And they felt it was going to have a significant impact on Canada-China relations. But I think some of that is going to be tempered because China needs Canada to be part of Huawei's international network. And it's worked pretty well with Canada. There's a lot of our scientists, our engineers think there are ways we can continue to work with Huawei. So I think that's dampened it a little bit, as hard as they're going to react. But I think that what is coming is going to be some kind of retaliation. That can be from something just the diplomatic protests through to canceling some major Canada-China dialogue activities at the government-to-government level. It could extend into new restrictions on foreign direct investment and R&D investment in Canada, of which Huawei is a major player. Or it could even extend into some kinds of restrictions on Chinese students coming to Canada. They have a ladder of options, which we'll wait and see. And I think it's partly going to depend on how fast this bail hearing goes, where it lands. And it's also going to depend then on the Canadian decision on extradition. But they're they are going to react. Everyone in Ottawa is expecting consequences. It just depends how far up the ladder the Chinese are willing to escalate this one.
How do they save face?
I think face saving is going to be very difficult in this situation for anyone. The arrest of Madam Meng, her treatment as a common in the same kind of ways that anybody was treated when they're arrested on an extradition request from the United States was not very pretty. She shows up in the courtroom in a green jumpsuit that is prison issue here. This is tough for the Chinese to not pay attention to. And it's tough not just for face reasons for China, but fear reasons. If this kind of woman runs into these problems because of the Iran sanctions, there are thousands of Chinese business people who are vulnerable. And when the decision is made to go after someone as high profile as Ms. Meng, it means that China doesn't can't get out of the spotlight on this one and will kick back, certainly at Canada. The question is whether they're going to raise those issues also with the United States and temper that truce period that was looked like it might give us 90 days to come to a solution. The United States wants to put pressure and maybe even decouple from China in a variety of high-tech sectors. And other countries like Canada are going to be expected to be part of that.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Paul Evans, a professor in the School of Public Policy and Global Affairs at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China summons U.S. envoy to protest tech executives' arrest in Canada. Australia passes world's first encryption-busting law. China exports, imports weaken ahead of U.S. talks. Malaysia Muslims rally to keep privileges. Arrest and murder detailed in Australian True Crime podcast series. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. For the first time in more than a century, bilbies are running wild in Australia's most populous state. The rare marsupial disappeared in New South Wales before the start of World War I because of introduced predators, including cats and foxes. 30 bilbies have been released near the town of Narrabri, 500 kilometers north of Sydney. We introduce Phil Mercer with more details from Sydney.
Bilbies were once widespread across much of Australia, but were last recorded in the wild in New South Wales State in 1912. Every year, bilby populations continue to fall, and conservationists fear the small marsupial could eventually become extinct because of predators, fires, and land clearing. Experts say the bilbies are barely hanging on in small, isolated pockets. In northern New South Wales state, environmentalists are celebrating what they're calling a historic moment. 30 bilbies from a captive breeding program have been released into a large predator-free enclosure north of Sydney. Without the protection of a 32-kilometre fence, experts say they probably wouldn't survive. Tim Allard is the chief executive of the Australian Wildlife Conservancy that's involved in the project. He says the release of these iconic animals is a historic moment.
Bilbies really only survive behind fenced areas. There are some remaining wild bilby populations, but they get predated upon heavily by feral cats and foxes. Behind a large-scale fenced area is really the only way of ensuring their survival. Well, the point of doing these projects is to return the bush to what it used to be before Europeans turned up, before feral predators such as cats and foxes were introduced. So in the not-too-distant future, you'll be able to go inside the fenced area and it'll be like stepping back in time before Europeans turned up. You'll have populations of bilbies, bandicoots, bridle-nail-tailed wallabies. It'll really be a very special experience.
Bilbies are known for their long rabbit-like ears and large hind legs. They are small nocturnal burrowing animals that grow to about 2.5 kilograms. They eat plant roots, ants, beetles and spiders. Australia has one of the world's worst rates of mammal extinctions, and the Bilby Project is seen as a vital part in protecting the nation's fragile biodiversity. It's estimated that 1 million birds in Australia are killed each day by predators, including feral cats, wild dogs and foxes. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, tens of thousands of Malaysian Muslims rallied in Kuala Lumpur against any attempt to strip the ethnic Malay majority of its privileges. First massive street gathering since Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad's alliance won an historic vote in May. The rally was backed by the country's two largest opposition Malay parties. We support your visit to VOA Asia Facebook for great stories and features. This is VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us as we both start out a brand new week here on VOA Asia. In Pakistan, there is a growing demand for natural remedies for everyday problems, leading some entrepreneurs to start their own herbal product businesses. They're converting grandma's home remedies into brand names. Saman Khan from Lahore is giving us a glimpse of this growing trend of online herbal markets in this report narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
Zara Temur is making different herbal products using plants and vegetables she grows in her backyard. She says that social media has made it easy for entrepreneurs like her to create and sell organic products.
The market for organic products is very active on social media. Many groups have female-only members where they share their major concerns, most of which relate to hair loss and skin issues.
Thamer says most commercial hair products contain chemicals that are often harmful for people.
Hair loss is a big problem in our society, and there was no product that had zero side effects. So after much research, I launched a brand and created a product that is an anti-hair loss spray. The beauty of it is that it is only made by fruits, vegetables, and herbs.
Social media has enabled Tamer and many other educated housewives like her to not only start an online business from home, but also to attract new customers through branding, marketing, and online advertising.
In old times, our grandmothers had a home remedy for everything, whether it was for an illness or hair loss or skin care. So old remedies have made a comeback. God has made these illnesses, but God has also made cures for them. This is our belief that the cure is found all around us.
Naima Halim, who is a homemaker, is running a similar online business while raising three kids at home. She says that having access to the internet makes it easy to directly listen to clients and their demands.
Online is our backbone because our entire business is on the internet. We started with Facebook, then moved to Instagram because our target audience is on Instagram. We recently launched our website as well.
These entrepreneurs claim that they never compromise on quality of their products and that their clients' loyalty and satisfaction is a key to long-term success.
In Pakistan, we do not have many facilities for testing products. It took us 3 months to get our products tested by a Russian pharmacist, and later they were tested on 50 people. Once they were confirmed to be safe for use, we sold our products on Facebook and then brought them to shops as well.
According to the Drug Regulatory Authority of Pakistan, the demand for herbal and natural cosmetics and medicines has increased by 75% in the last 10 years. For this very reason, the herbal products market is on the rise. For Saman Khan in Lahore, Pakistan, this is Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Coming up, perhaps there's a new way to ship those natural remedies and other products. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia. Security agencies will gain greater access to encrypted messages under new laws in Australia. The legislation will force technology companies such as Apple, Facebook, and Google to disable encryption protections to allow investigators to track the communications of terrorists and other criminals. Visit VOA Asia Facebook. It's unencrypted and freely available to anyone. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, according to the World Ocean Review, shipping by sea is responsible for about 3% of the world's total carbon emissions. But one Norwegian shipping company is creating hybrid ships and planning for a carbon-free future. We get free details from VOA's Kevin Enix.
This hybrid ferry, the Vision of the Fjord, is well named because its owners see it as a vision of the future of shipping.
So the basics of hybrid is that we can choose if we want to sail on pure diesel power or as a 100% electrical propulsion.
A regular diesel engine lives next to a giant battery room.
So now we have entered the battery room, and as you can see, here are the battery modules stacked here. We have 14 modules of 7 racks.
Short trip boats like Vision of the Fjord are proof of concept vehicles that suggest there may be a way to build long distance vessels in the same way.
We realize that this is not a solution for everyone. Deep sea shipping is a totally different ballgame. But with ships like Vision of the Fjords, we have at least shown that it's possible.
And it might in fact soon be mandatory, thanks to a recent agreement to significantly cut back on the industry's carbon emissions over the next 30 years.
The most promising or positive climate news that we've had this year is the agreement within the International Maritime Organization when they, this spring, negotiated to set a goal to reduce emissions by 50% by 2050.
That decision is pushing innovation on a number of levels, not only to lower emissions, but also in the applications of autonomous shipping vessels, like the Yara Kongsberg.
The politicians and the parliaments are extremely important to push our limits and all the clever heads out there further in this development, because when we have to, we do find the solutions.
And finding the solutions isn't just good for the planet, say environmentalists. It's also good for business.
Shipping industry needs to reduce the emissions. At some time in the near future, it will be more expensive to continue like we do than to invest in emission reduction technologies. So those companies who don't invest in future-proof technology, they will be the losers in the future.
A future that not only has room for innovation, but also makes fighting climate change a necessity. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia. China has warned Canada of severe consequences if it did not immediately release Huawei Technology Company Limited's chief financial officer, calling the case extremely nasty. Meng Wanzhou, Huawei's global chief financial officer, allegedly covered up her company's links to a firm that tried to sell equipment to Iran. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, when people get magnetic resonance image scans, known as MRIs, they spend a long time in a tube with very little headroom. If you haven't had one, you can imagine the procedure is especially difficult for people who are claustrophobic. At the University of Missouri, researchers are working on making the experience better for both doctors and patients. Scanning for the detailed picture is VOA's Carol Pearson.
MRIs help doctors diagnose diseases or injuries without radiation. MRI technology uses powerful magnets, radio waves, and a computer to make detailed pictures inside the body. This is especially important for heart patients. With magnetic resonance imaging, or an MRI, doctors can check to see if blood vessels are blocked. They can also check for heart damage after a heart attack. The downside is that patients have to lie motionless in a long tube for a long period of time. It's especially challenging for people with claustrophobia. Dr. Talisa Altes is a researcher at the University of Missouri School of Medicine. She says the procedure can be very difficult for some patients.
It can be very hard, it can be very tiring, and they're often very long exams. We schedule them in 90-minute, an hour-and-a-half slots, which, if you've ever been in an MR scanner, that's a long time.
In order to get a clear picture, patients have to hold their breath over and over. Robert Toman is another researcher at the University of Missouri School of Medicine who is working on this project.
In general, an MRI takes a long time to acquire a single image, and if you're moving during the acquisition of that image, you'll get blurring.
Toman and Altes are working on a project called HeartSpeed. With HeartSpeed, data analysis software pulls out motion information from the magnetic resonance images. Another researcher, Steve Van Doren, says HeartSpeed would allow radiologists to see the heart clearly, even if a patient is breathing normally.
We found that we could separate breathing motion from the heart motion quite well using the software, and we thought we should try to start applying this to real patient data.
The goal? A more comfortable scan for patients who can breathe at a normal pace. Without repeated breath holds, scans would also be much shorter, just 15 to 30 minutes.
Patients will benefit because it'll be easier for them to do the exam. Hopefully the radiologist who reads it or the cardiologist who reads the MRI will benefit because the images will be much better.
The researchers estimate that HeartSpeed technology will be available for clinical use within 5 years. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
There's an activity that many athletes have been doing for a long time without even knowing. It's now a fitness trend. It's called plogging, a combination of jogging and picking up. And what's being picked up is trash. The Swedes are credited with starting the trend, and now it's spreading to the United States. As Faiza El-Masri tells us, many athletes in the Washington area seem to enjoy multitasking with a group of like-minded runners to keep their city clean and beautiful. Faith Lapidus narrates.
A sunny and breezy day is perfect for plogging.
I didn't even know it was a thing, really.
Jeff Horowitz, a personal trainer at Vita Gym in Washington, has been plogging for a while.
This is just my personal ethic, where I would go for a run, and if I happened to see a piece of garbage laying around and it was within reach, it was kind of a little test of mine to see if I can grab it and throw it in a nearby trash can without stopping. And that way, I thought it gave me a little bit of exercise, a little focus to my run, and it helped clean up the neighborhood. And then I come to find out this has actually become an international movement, that there are people all around the world now doing this.
Getting ready to plog is similar to getting ready to jog.
We usually start with doing some bodyweight squats, some calisthenics, some balance work, and then just reviewing exactly what we're going to do and, of course, the route we're going to take. The gloves are important. You want to make sure that this is going to be healthy for you, even if you have good intentions. You never know what you'll find. It might be broken glass, medical waste.
There are rules for plogging.
You can't just suddenly bend over in front of someone else. It'd become like a Three Stooges event and everyone would fall over. And then you want to make sure that you kind of cover a little bit of different territory. People kind of naturally fall into that role. So if I'm a little bit more to the curbside, I'll look towards the gutter. And someone else a little bit close to the hedges, they fall into picking up there. So you get a rhythm going between people. Without sometimes even agreeing to it, you all fall into your role.
Sports event organizer Dana Allen finds plogging interesting, but admits she doesn't do it all the time.
When I'm training seriously for a marathon, I probably wouldn't be as inclined to stop regularly when I'm running because I'm focused on a certain goal. But then there's other days I'm out and just sort of more relaxed running and just having fun. And that would be a situation where I might be more inclined to do it.
Plogger Allen hopes one day there won't be a need for plogging.
I would just hope people would think twice before dropping their garbage on the ground. We have receptacles, seems like, every block. So it's easy to put your garbage in the trash cans. I just think people should think about it a little bit more and be cognizant of keeping the city as beautiful as possible.
That's the message ploggers hope people on the street will get when they see them running and picking up trash. For Faiza El-Masri in Washington, Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
We're going to pick up our scripts now. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. We're also streaming on VOA Asia Facebook and at our website, voanews.com. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you. Facebook, a great way to get in touch with us, as via email. voaasia@voanews.com is how you can write to us. We like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Aydin Utku, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That's Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.